Afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Mario Valencia. I represent the appellant in this case, Quinton Williams. And I'd like to reserve, if possible, a couple of minutes for
Have I got this right that a different lawyer tried the case and filed the appeal?
That's correct. That was two different lawyers.
As I recall, the lawyer who tried the case objected to the grand jury testimony coming in.
That's correct.
The lawyer who wrote the appellate brief did not brief the issue of whether that violated the Confrontation Clause.
That's absolutely right. What happened, that is right. He was represented, Mr. Williams was represented by Arthur Allen of the Federal Public Defender's Office at trial. Right after trial, Mr. Williams asked to have Mr. Arthur taken off of his case. The court did that and appointed a panel attorney by the name of Terrence Jackson. So Mr. Jackson represented Mr. Williams at the sentencing phase and then in the direct appeal.
Allen at trial.
Be careful.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Be careful what you wish for.
So it was Allen at trial, Jackson on appeal.
Correct. Okay. So in this case, Mr. Williams obviously is a denial. He's appealing the denial of his 2255 motion. He raised two issues in that 2255 motion. Both of them are ineffective assistance of counsel. One is ineffective assistance of counsel at the trial level for failing to secure his presence at a material witness deposition. And the second issue is ineffective assistance of appellate counsel for failing to raise the issue that Judge Kleinfeld just mentioned, which was the admission of grand jury testimony over objection at his trial. What this case is about is really it's a case of prostitution. My client was accused of being a pimp in Las Vegas. Imagine that. But he's accused of being a pimp and of bringing across interstate lines two prostitutes, one a Carmese Jackson, who was older, and then a Shaniqua Nichols, who allegedly is a minor.
Well, since your time is so limited, I would like to just ask a question about the grand jury testimony. How can you claim prejudice when the prosecution only used a very small portion of that grand jury testimony, I guess it's Ms. Nichols, that didn't refer to your client at all?
Well,
What prejudiced your client with the admission of her testimony?
Well, I believe that the prejudice is that they had to establish that the two prostitutes were involved in this case. Counts 3, 4, and I believe 5 all dealt with the minor prostitute. So they had to establish that there wasn't only Carmese Jackson involved in this case, but in fact that Miss Nichols was involved in this case as well. He was charged with trafficking children for sex. So they had to prove that this girl was a minor, that she was a prostitute, that she had earned money as a prostitute, that she had crossed interstate lines. And so they did this through her testimony.
So it went to prove that he was transporting a minor. What else did it?
That she was a prostitute.
And that she was a prostitute.
And that she was making money from that prostitution, and that money was used in their money laundering claim, was used to rent the hotel rooms at these different locations. So that's what that testimony was. And this isn't a case like Hernandez versus Small, where the testimony that was admitted was, oh, I went to this supermarket because I had the intent of stealing a car. Mr. Hernandez was on trial for murder. If the testimony had been, you know, something related to the murder, well, that would be different. But this is a case where he is accused of prostitution, transporting people across interstate lines for prostitution. These are key testimonies to the very elements of the crime. It's not like
especially Hernandez. Children.
Especially children. Exactly.
The one who testified at the grand jury, that was the minor?
Correct. That was the minor.
So three things that testimony proved: that she was a minor, that she was a prostitute, and that the money was used for the motel room?
Right.
And the money that went to the money laundering account?
Exactly. Went to the money laundering account.
I guess you'd need the minor in there as foundation to get that expert witness in.
You absolutely would. And that was the objection of trial counsel. It's pretty clear the government felt this testimony was relevant and necessary to their case. Otherwise, why admit it? there would be no purpose for it. So they obviously, as a matter of fact, in their motions that they filed to get her testimony admitted, they admit that this testimony will help their case. And of course they include the cat, you know, the little phrase, well, when it's viewed in light of other evidence. Because at that point in time, they were under the idea, now we know under Crawford, which was wrong, but under the Roberts test, where if there was some indicia of reliability, and then under Hernandez, which claimed that as long as the testimony didn't directly inculpate him, but there was some other side evidence that helped, you know, to incriminate him, well, then that those statements wouldn't come in. But clearly this testimony was relevant to their case. And just like you say, Judge, I mean, there would have been, they wanted Dr. Lee in, really, to come in because, in fact, this minor had given contradictory statements before. When she was first arrested, by the government's own admission, she never inculpated my client, not once. It wasn't until 10 days or 12 days after she's arrested where she supposedly comes in and inculpates my client. And then she gives that same testimony at the grand jury where we didn't have a right or an opportunity to cross-examine her.
Suppose the panel were to conclude, this is what they call in law school, I think that's a question. Okay. Suppose the panel were to conclude that the Jackson testimony is properly in and that it was not ineffective assistance of counsel to fail to secure your client's presence at the deposition. Where does that leave us in terms of analyzing prejudice?
As far as Ms. Jackson's deposition?
As far as Nichols is concerned.
As far as Nichols is concerned. Well, I believe what you have is if we had been given the opportunity to adequately cross-examine Ms. Jackson, we could have pointed out a lot of inconsistencies in her testimony. But your question, if I understand right, I guess I'm missing it.
It's in order to analyze the prejudice, one more thing we have to do is to look at the record of what was properly before the court.
Right.
And to establish prejudice, one way for the government to counter a prejudice claim, stated the other way, is to say, even without that testimony, there's plenty of evidence in the record to establish X or ABC.
I see.
So where are, if Jackson is in but Nichols is out, where are we on prejudice?
Well, again, I believe those are hearsay statements, but if it's in, then it becomes, I guess, a matter of weighing the circumstances out, because it's true that Ms. Jackson, in her deposition, does mention Sonequa Nichols, which is the minor in this case. She does mention that she's a prostitute, that they were working together, and directly inculpates Mr. Williams in that situation. But, of course, trial counsel had moved to exclude any evidence at all of the minor if the minor wasn't present to testify, because it was all based on what other people were saying. It was hearsay about supposedly what Ms. Nichols was doing and what she wasn't doing. It would have been up to the jury, I guess, at that point in time to determine whether or not Ms. Jackson was telling the truth or not, which is, again, why it was so relevant for us to have been given an opportunity to have Mr. Williams there and to cross-examine that witness at trial. If I had more time, I could go through the record and show you lots of examples where Ms. Jackson actually contradicts what the government themselves was putting in their motions about Ms. Nichols, her involvement, who was the one that originally told the police about Quentin Williams, all of those things.
We have to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution on that point, don't we?
That's a good question. I would assume so, since it's already been up on appeal and they've already won as far as the convictions go. But we're talking about ineffective assistance of counsel here and whether or not counsel, by failing to raise this issue on appeal, failed to raise to give effective assistance of counsel at the trial. Our point is, and I think Crawford goes to that, goes to the grand jury testimony. I believe it also goes to the testimony of Ms. Jackson. As a matter of fact, the majority opinion in the memorandum cites to Crawford and says in there that the test is no longer Roberts. And so they admit that she was, they claim she was unavailable. But what the majority then says is, but what we look now is whether or not Quentin Williams was able to cross-examine Ms. Jackson under Crawford. And I believe they erroneously conclude that he was. And they base that premise on the fact that Mr. Jackson erroneously, which is false, said he didn't want to be present at that deposition. Quite the opposite is true, and we've cited it in the record.
I think we're stuck with that, though, aren't we? aren't we locked into what the previous panel did?
Well, we are locked in with what the...
I mean, I'm sure you read it. I dissented in that, but that's that, isn't it?
I guess my point is well, it is. My point is simply that the majority opinion, they cite to Crawford, and what they found was that he had not cross-examined her because...
Let me make my question clear to you.
Yeah.
I understand your point about the lawyer who did the appeal omitting the Crawford argument about the grand jury testimony. I have trouble seeing what ineffective assistance the lawyer who represented the defendant at trial engaged in. It seemed to me that the magistrate prevented him from rendering effective assistance by not letting him get his client there and not giving him a fair chance to talk to his client, sort of thing where you'd want to be whispering, what question should I ask her? But it's all water over the dam, and I can't see what the lawyer did wrong at the trial. Also, the lawyer objected on the grand jury testimony.
He did. You're absolutely right. He did, and I know Mr. Allen, and he's a good trial lawyer, and I believe as far as that goes, it's true. The issue that we raised on appeal, which was raised by Mr. Quinton in his pro se 2255 motion, was, and by the way, my time's up. We're now into overtime. But very quickly, was simply that Mr. Allen failed to tell him that he could attend telephonically. This was a situation where I think everybody knew there was no way in 24 hours Mr. William, who was indigent, was going to be able to hop on a plane in Chicago and fly to Las Vegas to attend this deposition in person. The government, not once before that, had offered to pay his way to bring him here. So in 24 hours, Mr. Allen has to bring this guy here. He calls him, and he tells him about the depo.
I thought that came up, and he told the judge, look, it won't be effective because
exactly
he
right.
just gets to listen. He doesn't get to talk to me privately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But he also says he didn't tell him that he could attend telephonically.
I see.
Yeah. So that was the point that we were trying to raise, is if it's the only way he can attend is telephonically, and you don't tell him that, how in the world could that not have been ineffective in failing to tell him, by the way, I know you can't make it. I mean,
in my district, if you wanted to get plane fare, and I would expect for during the Christmas season, one day's notice, you'd pay the super-duper fare. In my district, when I was a district judge, you had to ask the district judge to allow the money.
Yeah.
You'd file an ex-party motion to allow the money. Could that have been done here?
Your client was indigent, was he not?
He is, yes.
Wasn't is,
that's right. Yeah, it could have been done. It could have been that the government could have come forward, as I believe they had the obligation to do, and offered to pay his way to secure his presence there, to hold her a little bit longer. And if she wasn't, was then wait just a few more days. I mean, it was only 24 hours. That's all it was.
Well, in a strange way, they actually did offer to pay his way, didn't they?
Well, what they did was, as on the 20th, the day of her deposition, after Mr. Allen says, I called him, I wasn't able to get a hold of him, and after he goes back in chambers and calls and says he's not available, the government then comes in and says, oh, we'd be willing to pay his way, Your Honor, and just for the record, we'd also like to put this. Yeah. So, anyway.
Thank you, counsel. Your time is up, but we may call on you for 1 minute of rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you.
It pleases the court, Brian Quarles for the United States. I would ask that you affirm the district court's decision denying petitioner's 2255 motion because neither of the two ineffective assistance of counsel claims that he raises merit the relief he seeks.
I don't get how a lawyer could miss the grand jury issue in the appeal. I mean, here you've got a zero witness case. None of the recipient or participating witnesses got in front of that jury. And two prostitutes, you'd think credibility might be a possible issue that the defense would raise. So letting in, not when there was an objection in the record, I don't understand how a lawyer could miss raising that on appeal.
I don't disagree with that, Your Honor. I think the issue that's really before this court is the fact that it was missed, how was the appellant in this case prejudiced?
Well, Lee's testimony was about as prejudicial as I ever heard. She testified in such a way as to make the jury think that the defendant was going to rent the baby out to perform fellatio on customers. No, she'd never met anybody involved. She didn't know anything about the individuals. She just said, well, this is how it works in the business. And as I understand it, the grand jury testimony was part of the foundation to get her in. Am I misunderstanding?
I think that's an accurate representation, Your Honor.
It is accurate?
Right. I would also submit that the actual grand jury testimony that was introduced at trial, which is at supplemental excerpts of records at 95 through 96, certainly do nothing to in any way implicate, incriminate the defendant or appellant in this case. And that part is critical. The case of Hernandez versus Small in this court rejected a similar confrontation clause issue where the defendant was not implicated or incriminated based on the declarant's testimony.
But doesn't Crawford versus Washington control this case? I couldn't understand why you didn't make a reference to it.
Well, Your Honor, quite honestly, what you relied upon was the majority's decision. And in that case, the court, of course, determined that his appeal should be denied after evaluating the facts and circumstances of the case, and specifically determined that an adequate cross-examination occurred.
We didn't have the grand jury testimony, though. All we had before us was the deposition testimony. The government perpetuated the testimony of one of the prostitutes by videotape. And there was cross-examination there, albeit not aided by the defendant sitting with his lawyer. And that's what we ruled on when we got this case on the merits panel. But we didn't have the grand jury issue, as I recall, did we?
You didn't have a grand jury, no, you did not, Your Honor. That was raised subsequent that his counsel, of course, failed to raise that throughout his appeal.
That's why we're here.
Correct.
If he'd raised it in direct appeal, it could have been dealt with there, right?
Exactly, Your Honor. And
I would not have even had to write a longer dissent.
One thing that's also important about the cross-examination issue is that appellant still has not identified any facts that his counsel failed to bring out on cross-examination in his absence. Again, the government would submit that he's done nothing to demonstrate that the admission of this evidence in any way.
How would you know? I mean, I remember those crosses when I did them. My client would sit next to me and say, ask her this, ask her that. And most of the suggestions would be bad ones, but occasionally there'd be a really good one.
Well, I would dare to submit that in that case you had a client who was willing to participate in the process. In this case, the defendant's own behavior prevented his trial counsel from doing any more.
What proof was there on absent Nichols' testimony? What proof was there on the record Mr. Williams transported a minor for purposes of prostitution?
I would submit, Your Honor, that the overwhelming majority of that testimony was based on the information that Nichols provided. I would submit that
my question is real simple and real direct, and it's easily answerable. And I guess the best way to answer it, is there any proof other than the Nichols grand jury testimony which would establish that Mr. Williams transported a minor for purposes of prostitution?
There's also the testimony.
Can we start with a yes or no? Can you tell me what the evidence is?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, tell me what it is.
The other evidence is the testimony from the other prostitute that testified.
And what did she say vis-a-vis Nichols?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, say it again.
What did she say with respect to Nichols?
She didn't make any specific or explicit comments as it relates to Nichols. If you're speaking of Nichols, the testimony that specifically incriminates the defendant regarding transporting Nichols?
The minor.
Right. I'm not familiar if there is any other testimony other than that, Your Honor. I misunderstood Your Honor's question.
Okay, so if the Nichols grand jury testimony is out, is it correct that there's nothing in the record to establish that Williams transported a minor across state lines for the purpose of prostitution?
I believe that's a fair assessment, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
So, is it reasonably possible that if counsel challenged the grand jury testimony on appeal, he would have won.
That's a reasonable interpretation, Your Honor. Again, I would submit, though, without, notwithstanding the fact that the testimony was admitted, the standard requires how was he prejudiced by the admission of that evidence. I would submit that he's failed to do so. I would also submit that it's arguable.
Wait, why wouldn't the prejudice be, number one, the jury believes he transported Nichols and not just Jackson? Number two, Nichols was the minor, the much more serious charge. Number three, it makes Jackson more credible. Here he is, she is a lawbreaker herself, testifying that he broke the law in connection with her. Not super-duper credibility, but if another person who broke the law the same way says, yeah, me too, it makes it more credible. Number four, it gets Lee in, this expert witness, who was probably the most dramatic thing in the trial since there were no other witnesses live. I don't understand why there isn't prejudice.
I would submit that the defendant has failed to demonstrate how he's been prejudiced, Your Honor. Those things may have played a role in this case, but he has failed to demonstrate that they did in this case.
How far could you do it? I mean, you can't put in evidence of the jury's deliberations. What more could you do?
Nor do we, Your Honor, know that those were facts that the jury took into account when they decided the appellant's guilty.
You're not allowed to, under the rules, to put in evidence of the jury's internal deliberations.
Of course, Your Honor. But my point is that we don't know that the jury relied upon the facts that you suggested to reach a guilty verdict against the appellant. What we do know is that he's failed to demonstrate how he was prejudiced by the admission of that evidence.
Because of the fact that he got convicted.
Well, but we don't know that how that the admissibility of that evidence in and of itself created the prejudice that resulted in his conviction.
Didn't the appellate counsel's failure to raise the grand jury issue on appeal deprive the prior panel of the opportunity to make that very assessment?
I would agree with that conclusion, Your Honor.
And that's not enough?
I would submit it's not under the cases that this Court has decided. Again, I would submit that under Hernandez versus Small demonstrates that the mere fact that there has been previous testimony, testimony that does not incriminate the defendant, would be admissible.
So let's say you have a defendant in a criminal case accused of two counts of murder. The defendant is accused of murdering Smith and Jones. And there's only one witness who can provide any evidence. It happens to be an eyewitness. But that's the sole and exclusive evidence on whether the defendant killed Jones. And you have the same, and it turns out that the evidence consisted of grand jury testimony and the person didn't object to it on appeal. Are you telling me that if that issue was raised, that the panel couldn't say Smith conviction stands, Jones conviction's out?
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is that the defendant has articulated that as a basis that he was prejudiced.
Okay. I guess
Thank
I understand
you.
Your argument, sort of.
Thank you, counsel.
Don't think we need anything.
I think you've addressed the arguments that were raised, counsel. United States versus Williams is submitted.